Although overseas, foreign terrorist organizations pose unique challenges to Homeland Security professionals and law enforcement. These groups attempt to conduct attacks within the United States and have plotted to target U.S. infrastructure as well as overseas U.S. interests. So in this episode, we're going to discuss how foreign terrorist organizations pose a unique threat to the state of New Jersey. Hello, everyone. My name is Dylan, and I'm an intelligence analyst with the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and I'm joined with my colleague Alyssa and my other colleague John. Today, we're going to talk about the unique threat that international terrorist groups pose to the state of New Jersey. So in our 2019 threat assessment, as far as ranking these groups, not much has changed. ISIS remains a moderate threat, while most of Al-Qaeda remains a low threat. But last year, we had Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula as a moderate threat as well. Before we get into the pieces that we wrote for the threat assessment, what has changed with Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, Alyssa?
Well, we've decided to downgrade AQAP from moderate to low in 2019 because of their lack of executing operations overall. So not just in the United States, but in the West in general. They haven't had a successful attack since Charlie Hebdo in 2015, and they're still concentrating on the civil war in Yemen. And so most of their focus has been regional. So therefore, they haven't had time to plot against the United States or Western interests because of what's going on within Yemen.
So with Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, or AQAP, do you think that they're focusing more on regional issues, or are they actually attempting to inspire attacks in the West, or are they becoming more of like an insurgent organization?
Well, this year we've seen a notable decrease in propaganda from AQAP, and we can safely attribute that to the number of airstrikes that have gone on in the past couple of years. So we know they have a diminished army of fighters, as well as people that are pushing out their propaganda. So we have seen a decline there. And we know that this is going on, I think, either the third or fourth year of the civil war in Yemen. So they're fighting the Houthis, they're fighting the Yemeni government, and they're attempting to keep a hold of the land that they've managed to have in their control. And they've lost some of that this past year as well.
So briefly, Alyssa, can you go over the different affiliates that Al-Qaeda has and where they operate and what we saw from them in 2018?
Yes. So as far as Al-Qaeda core goes, we didn't see too much of them this year. We did hear from Zawahiri quite a bit in 2018, which is not exactly typical of what he usually does, but we did find him coming and speaking out a lot about different issues. He specifically mentioned the United States and, you know, crusades against the United States and praising 9/11 on at least three or four different occasions. So that is still foremost in his mind. He's basically just looking to continue to be the leader of AQ overall and, you know, rallying the troops. But he's also been trying to push Hamza bin Laden into a area of a leadership position. But, you know, that's been slow. We didn't hear too much from him this year as opposed to in 2017. As far as Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, the most significant event that happened or that was reported this past year was the death of the chief bomb maker, Ibrahim al-Assiri. He has trained other people in bomb making skills, but we haven't seen or heard anything from anyone else as of this year. Notably, this is the first year that AQAP has not published its English language magazine, Inspire, since the publication's inception, which has really been the hallmark of the group. The next affiliate is Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, or AQIM. They're largely operating in Mali, Mauritania, Libya, Tunisia, and Niger. Their attacks are mainly IED attacks or suicide bombings targeting the police or government in that area. And we also have AQIS, or Al-Qaeda in the Indian subcontinent, who are operating in Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, Burma, and Bangladesh. So that group fights along with its ally, mainly the Taliban in Afghanistan. In May, the U.S. military confirmed that its leader, and his bodyguard was killed in an airstrike in Afghanistan. So that was a pretty big hit for AQIS. So lastly is Al-Shabaab. That is the East African affiliate of Al-Qaeda. And they remain very active in Somalia. They're trying to keep a foothold in Kenya, Ethiopia, and Djibouti. And the group continue to target government officials, military, police, journalists, and foreign aid workers in Somalia and Kenya. They've also been the recipient of many airstrikes from the United States within the past year and continuing into this year. So Al-Qaeda is still out there. Its affiliates are still very active, but they're more concentrating on their own areas of the country geographically rather than coming together and plotting against the West. We see a lot of threats from them, but not necessarily a lot of actions or disruptions.
So, Alyssa, you mentioned earlier that Zawahiri, the group's leader, has spoken out a lot this year. Was there any other specific pieces of propaganda that might be of note or any specific statements by Zawahiri that would be worth mentioning, or is it remaining pretty consistent with the group's typical messaging?
So Zawahiri has mostly just encouraged Muslims to unify, especially with the, I don't want to say downfall of ISIS, but with the declining of the caliphate and the disillusionment with ISIS. I think Al-Qaeda is hoping to gain some of the disillusioned fighters of ISIS and welcome them back into Al-Qaeda if they want to. They certainly have enough affiliates that any of those ISIS fighters that don't want to fight for ISIS anymore can go ahead and join Al-Qaeda. And, you know, they wouldn't have a problem with that. I do think that Zawahiri will continue to try to rally the troops and, you know, they're always in it for the long game.
Thanks, Alyssa, for discussing Al-Qaeda. We're going to switch over to Dylan now to discuss ISIS. Dylan, what did we see from ISIS in 2018?
So last year, ISIS took major hits on the battlefield, like they have been since essentially claiming their caliphate in 2015. They're only at about 2% of the territory that they once held, and they've been kind of forced into the Euphrates River Valley, which is the region along the Iraq and Syria border along the Euphrates River. That's where ISIS used to primarily operate out of before they declared their massive caliphate back in 2015. So in order to survive, the group is currently conducting guerrilla-style hit-and-run tactics, targeting government forces, local communities, and opposition groups. According to a U.S. military coalition spokesman, ISIS is trying to disrupt civilian services like water and electricity to try to get people to turn against the government and support ISIS. Also in 2018, ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi released an audio message for the first time in over a year, attempting to encourage individuals to conduct attacks using knives, firearms, bombs, and personal vehicles to try to encourage homegrown violent extremists like we talked about in last episode. ISIS continued to put out propaganda calling for attacks in support of them. They want other supporters in the West to conduct violence on behalf of the group so they can claim it. Like in November, Hassan Khalif Shire Ali stabbed three individuals, killing one in Melbourne, Australia. Ali actually previously attempted to travel to Syria to join ISIS, but his passport was revoked in 2015 after Australian authorities stopped him. Although ISIS's primary areas of operations were in Iraq and Syria, which they still are, the group has 13 affiliates worldwide. Through their official news agency, Amaq, ISIS released statements claiming responsibility for operations conducted by their affiliates. ISIS official propaganda outlet Al-Hayat even releases weekly updates detailing the casualties and equipment losses of its enemies. So why does ISIS do that? We believe that ISIS is taking claim and allowing these groups to act autonomously so that they can attempt to show this worldwide reach. So because ISIS is losing in Syria and Iraq, they want to show that they're remaining this powerful, autonomous organization that has affiliates all over. Now, even in ISIS propaganda, they're putting out propaganda officially from the ISIS affiliates. So there's 14 ISIS regions that we recognize, the first being ISIS Core, which is in Iraq and Syria, ISIS Sinai, which is in the Sinai Peninsula of Egypt. Then there's ISIS Egypt, which operates in the Egyptian mainland. There's ISIS in Libya, ISIS in Tunisia, ISIS in Algeria, and then ISIS in West Africa, which primarily operates in Nigeria and the Lake Chad region. ISIS in Somalia, ISIS in Yemen, Saudi Arabia, and the Caucasus, which is the northern Caucasus region of Russia between the Black and Caspian Seas. ISIS Khorasan, which is one of its most active affiliates in Afghanistan, ISIS Bangladesh, and ISIS Philippines. So these various affiliates will produce propaganda on behalf of the group, and the group will claim that the propaganda was produced, let's say, by ISIS Somalia, and they'll refer to it as their Somalia affiliate. So over the last year, like I said previously, they've been putting out different updates detailing the casualties and equipment losses, and these groups are essentially trying to show that they're still maintaining this fighting force throughout the world. But going into 2019, our office assesses that ISIS is entering its post-caliphate strategy. So they're going to continue to maintain that insurgency in Iraq and Syria. They're going to support their global affiliates, and they're going to attempt to continue to inspire attacks through propaganda dissemination. Also on the ground in Syria, ISIS fighters have been monitoring U.S. force movements and operations in Syria to prepare for attacks against them. In January, ISIS launched a suicide operation targeting American forces in Manbij, killing 4 Americans and injuring 10 others. So ISIS is going to continue to fight on the ground, especially in Iraq and Syria, while also maintaining its allegiances to those affiliates. So, John, we said in our last podcast that ISIS and al-Qaeda have continued to inspire folks to conduct attacks, have continued to inspire them to provide material support, to try to help them recruit new members and supporters worldwide. Is that all they're doing domestically, or are they still attempting to join the group? Because I remember when ISIS first declared its caliphate, we had a lot of individuals trying to travel, and then they were just trying to conduct attacks here. What are we seeing in recent news?
They're trying to do both, actually. So the focus seems to be attempting to join ISIS, and then if that fails, falling back on a plan of conducting terror attacks domestically. So in January, authorities arrested 3 individuals in Michigan for material support after 2 of them helped their friend buy a plane ticket so he could travel to Somalia to join ISIS. They had discussed, though, if their plan failed, if they were not able to get overseas, that they would just try a vehicle ramming attack or something of that nature back here in the States. And then in October of 2018, authorities arrested another individual in Ohio after he had attempted to travel to Afghanistan by way of Kazakhstan to join and fight for ISIS. He, like the others, also discussed that if he wasn't able to get overseas, that he would just attempt to conduct a terrorist attack back here in Ohio.
So you said that the one individual was trying to travel to Somalia to join ISIS. So he wanted to join, I'm assuming, ISIS's Somalia branch, as well as you said that the one individual wanted to travel to Afghanistan to join ISIS. Do you think that there's a reason that maybe they're not trying to travel to Iraq and Syria anymore? Do you think that has to do with them losing that land? And like we discussed, the group is sort of allocating this autonomy to its affiliates around the world.
Yeah, with military successes in Iraq and Syria, they've lost a lot of ground, and those areas are not exactly areas for growth for ISIS. The 3 in Michigan were actually Kenyan-born U.S. naturalized citizens, so Somalia for them, I think, was a little closer to an area that they were familiar with. So traveling back to Somalia, which borders Kenya, was probably an easier reach for them, emotionally and mentally, for them to kind of get to. So as for the case of the individual in Ohio, Afghanistan has been a battleground for over a decade, so the ISIS branch there is still very active in recruiting and operations.
Thanks, John, for that explanation. Now that we've talked about al-Qaeda and ISIS, and we've talked about what they've done in 2018 and what we see them doing in 2019, Alyssa, is there anything that sticks out from al-Qaeda, maybe messaging-wise, from 2018 that you would like to discuss?
Well, aside from the messages from Zawahiri, we've seen most likely from al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula or al-Qaeda core supporters, we've seen a female magazine come out or female targeted propaganda come out from them. And it's in Arabic, but it's focused on females supporting their jihadist husbands and kind of appealing to their domestic side, cooking, cleaning, taking care of your husband while he's, you know, out working. And that magazine has been out for about a year now. So they've consistently published that on a monthly basis, which is kind of interesting. They did attempt a female-focused magazine years ago with only one issue that kind of tanked. So it's interesting that this one, they've kept up with it.
That's interesting because we haven't seen any major propaganda targeted to females by ISIS, but you're saying that we've seen it by al-Qaeda. What do you think is the reasoning behind that?
Well, Al-Qaeda has always had the stance that they wanted women in a supporting role. They didn't want to see them on the battlefield. They didn't want to see them involved in executing operations or, you know, shooting guns or anything. Whereas ISIS has always encouraged females to be part of the caliphate and, you know, travel with their husbands or, you know, just fight themselves. Al-Qaeda has always been the opposite, and they still maintain that to this day, that a woman's role is only a supporting role, not an active fighting role in jihad.
Thanks, Alyssa. So I just want to thank Alyssa and John for joining us today on our podcast to talk about international terrorism.
Thanks, Dylan.
No problem, Dylan.
And I also want to thank the listeners for tuning in to this episode of the podcast. If you want to find out more information about the international terrorist groups, as well as our analysis on them, you can go ahead and look in our New Jersey Terrorism Threat Assessment for 2019. It can be found on our website at www.njohsp.gov. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we're going to talk about domestic extremism. Thank you for listening. Intelligence Unclassified, signing out.